Hey, everybody. Thanks for being with us as we spend a couple days reflecting now that we've been through the Gospel of Luke, the text. And I think at this point, really word for word, if you've hung in there with us, we're grateful for that. And as we come to the end, we thought it might be helpful rather than to just walk away, to spend a little time reflecting on what Luke said to us this time through and what we see in it, what Luke offers the church. As you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four Gospels, each bring their own set of their own set of important points, their own tendencies, their own flair. We've said from the beginning that part of Luke's drive in this, not only is Luke an exceptional writer, not only does Luke have very great command over the Greek language, is a good storyteller, is a great author. Luke cares about the outsider. Luke is going to write Acts and is moved by the idea of the gospel going out to Gentiles. Lots of snapshots of that, foreshadowing that in this, the place of women, the place and passion for the poor and ministry to the poor. It's interesting, Michael. I would say particularly in Matthew, maybe also in Mark, John's a little bit more all over the place, but Luke is to me the most obvious example of having some agenda points. And I know that agenda is often a negative word in our day and time. I don't mean it in that sense at all. I mean, not only does Luke endeavor to tell the Jesus story, as do Matthew and Mark, but Luke couples that with some of his theological convictions, as do they, but theirs are more, I think, spiritual in nature. Luke tends to be a little bit more earthy, and I think that I've noticed again as we've gone through this just how much Luke cares about what will be the church's ministry to those on the outside, those who are left out, those who are knocked down, and how much the Jesus portrayed by Luke cares about those things as well. And Luke does a beautiful job, I think, of highlighting his passion as he tells the story.
I think you're absolutely right, Clint. I think the part of Luke in this reading that did stick out to me as it connects to that is not just the people that he includes in his vision of Jesus's proclamation of who this kingdom is being proclaimed to and what it means for them. All of that is here. I think I would actually point us, you know, at the risk of going back all the way to the beginning here, but chapter 1, verse 1, I think two things that I want to lift out is actually moving here to verse 3, the orderly account shines through in this book, Clint. I think the thing that struck me in this reading, just to be honest with you, is the fact that Luke says so much with so little word count. He is so precise in the telling of these stories. We said numerous times throughout this study about, look at how much Luke has gotten out of a short section or a short teaching or a short a sort of movement within the text. When Luke sets out to give that orderly account, I think that you can really see how Luke carefully and thoughtfully compiled not just the stories in their order, but the wording of how that story is told, what exact images to use in that story. Luke was exacting in the attempt to make an orderly account. I think if you read closely, you can see that order woven through. And I respect that, because a book that you might put this in, not opposition to, but a book that's different in that way is Mark. Mark is also, it's just sharp. It's got these little sort of staccato movements to it. It also is not a wordy book. It's economical. It's short as a gospel goes. But there's something in the tone and tenor of Luke that strikes me how it's been woven together with a kind of intentionality to serve the point. And I'm sorry, I monologued a little longer than I intended there. The point is in verse 4, so that you may know the truth concerning the things I've been instructed. There's clearly a point that Luke is not writing words because he found them. He didn't dredge up a couple books and then smash them together. No, this is clearly Luke wanting the believer to know a full account of the truth, everything that the believer needs to know, and then for that to be done in a way that is structured, it follows, it coheres, and it obviously has stood the test of time. The church saw in this book what Luke attempted to do. We talk about how it's inspired to do that work, and it's incredible in that way.
If you don't know particularly the Gospel of Matthew well, you might not notice this in Luke, because you would have to notice it in its absence. I've been reminded as we've gone through this how much less, and forgive me, this is loose language, but how much less Jewish emphasis is placed. You know, in Matthew, there's all the fulfilled prophecies, and it all has to do with Jesus as Jewish Messiah. Because Luke has a broader perspective, and because Luke sees Jesus not only as the Messiah of the Jewish people, but as the deliverer of the Gentiles, that stuff is largely written out of Luke. I mean, it's certainly in there, but by and large, it's not one of Luke's emphasis. And so it's interesting. I've been wrestling with the question, is Luke the gospel you start with? If someone comes to me and says, I've never read a gospel, which one should I read first? There would be some real upsides to say Luke, because you're going to get bogged down in some of the cultural religious stuff of the first century less in Luke. Luke has a plainer storytelling style. As you said, Mark is short. Mark is simple, but Mark is messy. And that's not an insult against the way Mark is written. It's just Mark isn't concerned with wrapping things up in the way that Luke is. His style is very different. The one exception, I hope I've known it, but I think maybe I had forgotten it, or at least it struck me again this time through. I think I had forgotten that in the places where Jesus says harsh things, I have subconsciously known the Matthew version of the passages. So yeah. there were several moments in this where I thought, oh, Luke is harsher in the, you know, bring that servant to me and have him cut in pieces before me. And some of those are in parables. Some of those are in the woes that are given. The business about hope you're not pregnant when the day comes, because people are, there's a heaviness to Luke that I think I have, I've been less aware of, because in those passages, I think I've leaned on other gospels and not on the harsh version. And I forgot some of that was in Luke, to be perfectly honest. So I was surprised to be reminded of that.
Some of the individuals too, who make appearances, or if not appearances, they're given a certain amount of emphasis in the text, have struck me. You're not going to find anything akin to like Mary's song in the other gospels. There's a kind of highlighting of that, or Joseph of Arimathea, or though there's not a lot told about that, or those on the road to Emmaus, those are sort of towards the end of the book. But you have sprinkled throughout these characters who Luke wants to introduce us to and wants us to know, because in many ways they speak to the Gentile church that is going to receive this letter. They're going to both give a kind of personal connection within Jesus' story, teaching that it's going to exemplify where they fit within the kingdom of God. But I think it's even deeper than that. I think that ultimately Luke's vision is that in God's economy, all of this time is bound together. That, in other words, there's nothing that Jesus does for either the Jew or the Gentile, or Jesus does prior to his birth throughout the prophecies of the prophets, all the way through his death and resurrection and beyond. Of course, we're going to see that in the book of Acts when you see Luke part 2, essentially. You're going to see how in the midst of all of this time, God's redemptive power is at work, and it's happening in unsuspected places. It's happening in unsuspecting people. The kind of reversals that happen over and over again, Jesus keeps coming back to this idea of the upside down kingdom. And I think Luke, in the way that he tells it, if you're going to look for the pros of it being one of the first gospels a person would read, I think you could say whenever Luke discusses something that is by its nature religious in the sense of being Jewish, looking backward before Jesus, Luke generally takes a lot of care to define those terms or to explain exactly what the religious observance is for, all those kinds of things. There's a kind of awareness and accommodation to the fact that this text is going to be read by people who may not have a significant amount of knowledge or experience with the Old Testament and the practices of the Jewish religion. And I think that makes Luke not entirely unique. Other gospels also do some of that work. But it makes it accommodating. It recognizes its place in sort of the timeline of salvation. And I think that makes it a really interesting gospel in its own right.
It could be because this is the material that's fresh in mind as we've just gotten through the end of the book. But there were two things that struck me about Luke's version of the passion narrative, or what we call the cross, the narrative of the cross. The first, and this is generally true, I think, in the book of Luke. I think it's more observable in Luke. Jesus never really gets sideways with the crowd,
right?
In Luke. In the other gospels, there are moments that the crowds, particularly in the late narrative, when Jesus is on the cross or near the cross, going to the cross, the crowd turns on him. We don't really see that. There is a positive relationship. You know, how many times early in the Gospel of Luke tell us everybody followed him? There were so many people. Yeah. That Luke seems to, from the perspective of the crowd, have a very positive experience of Jesus and the people. And even at the end, they go home beating their breasts. There's not this moment where mm-hmm. they join in hating Jesus or hating on Jesus. And secondly, in the crucifixion narrative, Luke really downplays, for as rough as he is in other places, he really downplays the physical assault to Jesus. Jesus hasn't said much before the cross. He's beaten once. Luke doesn't really go into details there. Pilate says, I was going to have him flogged. There's no other mention of him being, you know, beaten. He's not stabbed in this one in the side. Right. There's a kind of transition where pre-cross, he doesn't say too much. And then three of Jesus' last seven words, once he's on the cross, he actually does have some things to say as he knows he's fulfilling his mission. But there's a little bit different slant to some of those details in Luke's version of the crucifixion narrative that I think stood out to me. And again, it could be that's what we did most recently, so it's fresh in my mind. But it's a noticeable difference.
This is giving voice a little bit to a thing you've already raised, but you know, for me, it was around chapter 21 that I started to be reminded of some of the really tough sayings of Jesus, because it felt like around there we
dug in.
We did, and it was slow, and there was a lot of, yeah, this is hard. This is going to be difficult. This is a really strong critique, and it kind of goes back to other themes that I think I knew were in Luke. I mean, intellectually, I've certainly read this book before, and so I've been exposed to it before. But emotionally, the weight of going verse by verse at this pace, just the sheer number of times when Jesus is in conflict with the very specific tribe, the religious leaders, the Pharisees, which changes to the scribes and the Sadducees once he gets to Jerusalem, but just this sustained theme. Luke never lets up on it. There's really, man, is there the woman and his, sorry, the man whose daughter was sick.
Jairus.
He comes to Jesus and asks for Jesus to come to bear. Are there other people that I'm missing? It's almost without exception. There is exception, but almost without exception, the religious leaders are cast in a very self-righteous, arrogant, judgmental light. I mean, Luke hammers that home, and I think that it was such a consistent theme. It was such a heavy theme. It struck me as we went throughout the book, and I do think around that chapter 21, when Jesus really does dig into these woes up to Jerusalem and the warnings against self-righteousness and the be on your guard or you'll miss the good news, you'll miss the coming kingdom. It's such an orderly book. It's clearly these are not accidental emphasis. And I think for a person of faith, and very personally, a person who's given a lot of time, effort, and energy in my own life to the faith, I mean, those are very stark warnings that come from Luke, and I think helpful warnings, but difficult, weighty warnings.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you can join us tomorrow, again, we don't want to overdo this, but I think maybe tomorrow we have some conversation about the unique aspects of Luke, the things that are in Luke that aren't in other places, and what we think that means, not only to Luke, but to us. You may have been surprised during this study if we were accurate and remembered to tell you some of the favorite things that people know about the Gospels are only in Luke's Gospel. Sometimes people aren't aware that without Luke, we might have many people's favorite parable or favorite story. And so we'll have some conversation tomorrow about what it is that only Luke brings us in the Jesus story, and then we'll wrap up with some thoughts.
Friends, we're grateful to have you with us today. Hope you'll join us tomorrow, and certainly hope that if you've been interested in a study like this, do subscribe. We have some really interesting content planned ahead as we'll transition into another study in just about 2 weeks. We'll share more about that as we go. Till then, be blessed.